I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Nick Thornton joins me now. He is a podcaster and a higher education professional and learning strategist. He is the host of a terrific podcast, People Doing Things. Since November 2014, he has been talking to creative and unusual minds, artists, and personalities. And sometimes he doesn't have guests, and the listener is treated to their host talking about life, observations of life, the state of affairs politically and socially. Mr. Thornton is a gifted storyteller, and that, as well as his interest in creativity, bring him to this show today as I ask him about why he started this podcast and the sort of conversations that he has hosted over at pdtpod.com, pdtpod.com. The Twitter handle is at Thorntonosity, and the show's on Facebook at facebook.com/peopledoingthingspodcast. It's always fun to talk with people in the podcasting world, especially in this town. Please welcome to the Plant Online program in person today, Nick Thornton. Mr. Thornton, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in to do this. I appreciate it.
Yeah, not at all.
So, I'm not an infrequent listener, and have been for about a year or so.
Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And what fascinates me, as I said in the introduction, is the ease by which you talk with yourself. I mean, I do this, but I mean, as you just saw, the intro.
Yeah.
I had to write that down.
Sure.
I mean, but you could probably.
But it sounded so good.
Well, you learn how to fake read, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I guess that's what I admire so much about your show, is that you just turn on the thing, and you can talk for 45 minutes. And are you alone when you do that?
You mean the shows that I just do by myself?
Yeah,
I mean, I try to be. It's very distracting to me if there's somebody else in the room. Like, if my partner's home, I'm like, can you go off to the other side of the house? Because it is just thinking out loud, right? And so if there's somebody else around, you then sort of feel like they're a part of the dialogue in a way. And, you know, whether by design or by accident, that's kind of just how I prefer to do it.
And, well, we'll talk about why you do the show, but how often do you do it? You do, what, one or two a week? Or no, you do more than that, because you have one with a guest, and then you have one where it's just you, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I try to do two a week, and depending on what my week looks like, that can change. I've been pretty consistent at doing at least one a week since I started with, you know, I think two or three exceptions, where whether I went on a trip or something. But yeah, I tried to do one early in the week that a friend once called the short rambly ones. It's just me thinking out loud, and then one with a guest.
Well, see, that's the other thing. I mean, most of the guests I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I like listening to the short rambly ones, too.
Sure.
Because it's a wonderful insight into, well, you, but also whatever jam you get yourself in.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and because it's local, you know, I know the places that you go to and things that. And, you know, I know it's a great slice of life, I suppose, in terms of you know, this town.
Mm-hmm.
And and years from now, it'll be a great record, don't you think?
Absolutely. It's kind of funny that you say that, because, like, I studied history, and there's always that part of my brain that's thinking about this a bit as a historical archive of independent art. Not the stuff, the crap that I'm saying to myself in my closet, but the guests I have on that, you know, and some of them will go on to do great, amazing things and maybe become wildly successful, and some may not. But I still think that's so important. I think Vancouver also has a really long tradition of an independent art scene, and I think it's important for people to chronicle that. And, I mean, like, obviously I don't need to tell you that. You've been doing this for well over a decade now.
And even the ones that you do on your own, I mean, that's a diary in a way, isn't it?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Finding the guests, I mean, most of them are folks that you know. I mean,
yeah, by and large. At least in the first, about the first year was mostly direct friends of mine or friends of friends who I'd at least talked to in person a number of times. And now what's made this year a little difficult is that I kind of exhausted all of those people, so I'm having to really reach out a lot more, and it takes a lot more scheduling prowess to lure people in to have an hour-long conversation.
I have to say, after all the years of doing this, that's the part that I least enjoy. Yeah. It is the wrangling and getting a calendar out, sitting there, blocking out the time that you need to not only prepare for the show, but to get the person in.
It's not even, yeah, well, and that's the thing. It's not even setting aside the time, because I leave my life fairly open outside of work to do the podcast. But it, in terms of the actual finding the guests and convincing them to be on, there's sort of two types of guests. Ones that are immediately like, yeah, I totally get it. We're just going to have a chat. I don't prepare questions. I don't tell them what we're going to talk about. They just come in and we chat. And then there's guests that it's like weeks and weeks of having to explain more about why I want to talk to them and what the show will be like. And ultimately that can work out too, but it's definitely my least favorite part of it, is trying to get people on the show.
Well, I'll tell you from personal experience, once you do this for a few years, you don't need to explain anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I find that's also been just having... Well, 5 years was when, once you were established for 5 years, you could say, well, you didn't need to tell them what the website was anymore. People sort of knew what it was.
Yeah, they'd at least have some idea of it.
Yeah, or they could go back and see who you've talked to before, and then that was very easy in getting, oh, well, he did it. Well, then, you know, I don't see why I shouldn't, right?
Yeah.
What interests me about the show is your interest in the creative process. Were you always in... sort of the arts? I mean, was that something that you enjoyed? Well, you obviously enjoy consuming art and attending shows and that sort of thing. But were you always a creative person yourself?
Mostly, yeah. But the show starting was kind of out of a personal, creative, existential crisis where I had found a good job, but it took up a lot of my time and a lot of my mental energy. And so I felt very disconnected from that, and my partner works in the arts, and so I kind of always had this, you know, this little jealous feeling when you see people be a part of a creative project, and I hadn't made any music or painted or done anything that I'd done in the past for years. I mean, once I kind of got into university and got a job at a university, that really sort of took over, which was great. But that creative side really fell to the wayside. And so the podcast was honestly just a way that I thought, hey, if I like invite a person each week to talk to who's in some sort of creative endeavor, I can just live vicariously through them.
Yeah.
Or maybe it will inspire me to get back into it. But I didn't really... I've always been in the arts. But now, to me, my art or way into it is talking to people.
But you've also written... a novel, haven't you?
Well, I'm still writing. That's been with the ongoing saga through the show, as well as this novel that just won't finish itself. I write and I play music and things like that. But and all of it very much just for fun. I wouldn't call any of it a serious endeavor.
But that's something about the creative process, is that you can talk to so many people, as you have, as I have.
Sure.
And still not know it all. There's something unknowable about it, and that's what makes it consistently fascinating and interesting to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I played shows, and I've booked gigs and done all that, and recorded albums, and yet having a musician in my house last night talking about that whole process, it still felt new. I wasn't like, oh yeah, I know what that's like. Like, it's different for each person, and each person's lens and way of moving through it is so different that, I mean, that well is never tapped.
And it also shows us just how many remarkable people there are close to us. I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you've gone to your friends as guests, but then, you know, you get to know people that know people.
Mm-hmm.
And just in this town, I mean, the surfeit of creative people in various disciplines is remarkable. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people over the years, but I mean, I haven't talked to as many as I should.
Sure. Oh, and that's the thing. I mean, I think there's times where I have a bit of a crisis where I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm going to run out of people to talk to. I mean, this town is only so big. But there's always people coming in and coming out and doing new things. And that's something I've discovered too now, is I can go back and revisit conversations with people that have been on the show that... you know, a year later, 2 years later, like, where are they at? What's been the progress? And to me, that's really exciting, too, to say, you know, our first guest on the show ever was my downstairs neighbor, Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
And he just happened to mention his passing interest in kabuki dance. And I talked to him this week, and he's in Tokyo on a grant studying kabuki dance at a very prestigious school under very prestigious teachers there. That's incredible. And of course, like, nobody knows who he is, and
yeah,
it's not something that's going to catapult him to fame. But I find stories like that are just so fascinating, but also... I think it inspires you to know that, you know, in your day-to-day, getting on the bus and bumping into people and, you know, I'm something of a curmudgeon, so I don't always move through the world with a ton of grace and positivity, but getting to have those conversations with people and realize, like, oh, there's a lot going on inside of people.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I heard a bit of that, the fellow from Japan,
mm-hmm.
and... Yeah, the fact that he's traveled all that way and spent as much time as he will.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just interesting. I mean, it's not a form of art that I know anything about, nor inclined to learn anything more about.
Sure.
But, you know, it's just the fact that he's out there doing that and wanting to do that. I mean, you see just how many remarkably talented people are, just, if you just ask, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Well, and it goes to that story thing of that I love hearing people tell stories and express what it is that moves them. I mean, I think that we all feel the same sort of fear and panic about a lot of things, and we just don't voice it. And it's ceaselessly amazing to me that so many people have these great stories, and some of my favorite stories that I listen to outside of the people I talk to aren't with my heroes or incredibly famous people. I love hearing a long interview with somebody and I have no idea what they do. I don't know anything about their industry.
Yeah.
I'll listen to that for an hour easily.
Yeah. Was conversation something that came easily to you even as a kid, say?
Yeah. Yeah. I've always been a talker.
Yeah.
And that, from a very early age, the nice way of putting it was like the gift of gab. Usually it was more on the side of Nick is disrupting his classmates. And I've been told to shut up more than once in my life at just about every juncture.
Yeah, it's funny how, I was never... I mean, I guess if I knew the people, I would be, you know, talkative.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, if I didn't know the people that I was around,
mm-hmm.
then I would, you know... recoil or not speak, but I mean, doing this has I wouldn't say it's made me better at talking to people. It's made me better in finding people I want to talk to. If that makes any sense.
Oh yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I'll see friends or something like that that I just really don't care for. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and,
I do.
And then
in a weird
I'll talk
way.
To somebody else and. The other side of the room at the party or something.
Absolutely. I was going to say that. I found I'm actually naturally a quite shy person. Like, I like others to initiate a conversation. Once I'm in it, I'm good. But I do have trouble, you know, if I'm just in a room full of strangers or even of friends, I'm usually just going to listen in and pick and choose my times to jump into a conversation. But, I feel exactly the same way that I feel now if I'm at a party and I know the host and all their friends, I'm probably going to go talk to the one person I don't know, and be like, what do you do? And they're like, oh, I'm an engineer. I'm like, great, tell me about that.
Yeah, and it's also tyrannical in the sense that, I mean, if I met someone famous, I probably wouldn't go up to them and talk to them, but because there is a conversation that we have to do for this show,
mm-hmm.
I'm forced to.
Sure.
And the great thing about that is that I can control what I'm, you know, what the conversation will be about by the questions I ask.
Absolutely.
So it's power that perhaps
sneaky, isn't
yeah,
it?
one ought not to have. how do you view your audience? I mean, when you turn the mic on, do you have a sense of who listens to you?
I think I do now. I didn't really think about it in the beginning because it was really just something I needed to do, and I just decided I'll do it for a year, and I don't care who listens. If anyone listens, this is just something I need to do. I do have a fairly good sense now because obviously the people that I know that listen to it will tell me and give me feedback. Not always positive. You know, if people listen to something and they like it or they don't like it, they'll let me know.
Yeah.
But it's pretty wide ranging. Like I wish... No, I mean, I guess in some ways I'm glad that I have the demographic I do, which is just... like so broad, for, you know, like 18 to 99 kind of thing, and mm-hmm. people from all different backgrounds. I think a lot of creative people do listen to the podcast. Obviously, friends of the guests, that's the core audience. Mm-hmm. We see a little bump when somebody lets all their friends know that they're yeah. they're doing the show. But I think it is just, it's people like you and me that are interested in conversations and stories. And yeah, I mean, that's my only real sense of the audience. There's, you know, I can track some demographics and analytics, and I know that enough people listen to it that I want to keep doing it.
But yeah, so, but does that consume you if, when you see something that does spike, something that is popular, that you think, oh, well, maybe I should do more of that?
Yeah, it used to a lot more, and yeah. I've gotten better at ignoring that.
Yeah.
And I'm still conscious of every once in a while I want to have somebody that's maybe a little bit more well-known. Firstly, because I'm compelled to talk to them, and I think they'd be an interesting guest. But secondly, I know it's going to be a little bit of a bump for the show, and that more people will listen. And I see that as, it's not a bump for me, it's a bump for the unknown artists who are going to follow.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So that to me is the only real thing I think about now.
And in terms of the topics, I mean, even when you're talking, when it's just you on the show, it seems like there's nothing that's off topic.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, it's just whatever is stuck in my craw. I do try to not do it like a rant every Monday, which ends up kind of happening most days, but I try to just think about something that is, like, what's consuming me, what's in my brain. I try to not be too political. It probably doesn't come across that way, but I really just try to work through whatever thing it is I'm trying to work through.
And so in that sense, it is therapy.
Oh, yeah.
Does it work for you, though? I mean, does it make life easier?
It does. It does in this way, that there's a few times over the last 2 years where I, you know, have not done a show for like a week and a half or maybe 2 weeks. I think the longest was like 2.5 weeks. And I would feel so conflicted and torn up inside and just, like, angry and confused, not know what's going on. And as soon as I would do a show, I'd be like, oh, I'm fine now. Like, I know the impact when I don't do shows. I don't know that I can really articulate what the impact is as I'm doing the shows, but I think it's just that thing of, and I decided early on too, that if I was going to do this, I wanted to be completely honest. Obviously, you have to have boundaries at some point, and, you know, I try to not drag family members into it too much. I try to be careful with what I say, but at the same time, I want to be completely honest, because that was kind of my whole purpose for doing the show. So in that sense, it's, you know, 30, 40 minutes a week of free therapy. Granted, it's a bit of an echo chamber because I'm only talking to myself, but just to verbalize it and get it out, and then also sometimes get people's reactions to it, whether they agree or disagree. But I think it's that shared, like, life is really difficult. It's hard being a human being, and it's okay to acknowledge that.
Live in this town and use the bus system or you know, get sick in this town.
I mean, absolutely, you know. Yeah. And it can be really trivial things, or it can be things like this week where I had, you know, the mm-hmm. stomach flu or food poisoning and thought I was dying.
Yeah. One of the shows that I found fascinating, not one of the shows, because you talk about it from time to time, is anxiety.
Yeah.
And is, I mean, that is something that you have had to deal with, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In your life. And the one show where you were having a panic attack as you were taping.
Yeah.
Would you tell people listening to us who haven't listened to it, obviously,
mm-hmm.
What was happening to you?
Oh, man. It's kind of hard to remember, honestly, because there's like almost this weird, like, not out-of-body experience, but like disassociation thing that kind of goes on, which I think is why I was able to talk about it in the moment. And it also helped, too, because I could sort of talk myself through it as mm-hmm. it was happening. It's not terribly frequent, but a lot of times it just starts with, I don't know why, it just sort of comes on. Often it's like in the evening, late at night. Like, if there's not distractions
mm-hmm.
and the panic sets in about whatever it is, usually a variety of things. And it's just that, like, you know, I'll start sweating, the heart starts racing. And it's just this fidgety, like, I just can't get comfortable in my own skin. Like, just you want to lie down, but lying down doesn't feel comfortable. You want to go for a walk, but that's not enough. Like, just this real anxious ball of energy that gets stuck inside of you that you just have to work through. Like, there's no, you know, for me, there's no thing that you can take or a real method. You just have to let it work through itself. And part of that, I think, is acknowledging that it's happening and going, okay, I'm having a panic attack right now. Like, I'm not dying. The world isn't ending. I'm having a panic attack, or I'm having an anxiety attack. And sometimes that works really effectively, and sometimes it doesn't help at all. You can just acknowledge that you feel horrible, and you just continue to feel horrible for an hour.
Yeah, and I mean, you it's been a while since I heard it, so I'm trying to piece the situation together. But the fact that you, I mean, did you hear from other people who heard that, and did they tell you what they thought, perhaps?
Yeah, it was a bit delayed. I mean, I think I've heard feedback throughout, because you're right. I mean, I have talked about it a lot. Yeah. That was the one that I did, like, a live taping of an anxiety attack. I think a lot of people were just grateful that somebody else felt the way they were feeling. I mean, I didn't do anything special. I didn't have any solutions for people. So people weren't like, oh, thank you so much, or thank you for bringing awareness to this. It's a fairly common thing. But I think a lot of people, you know, and myself included, when people give me the feedback about feeling similar things, is that you just go, oh, right, I'm not the only person, right? I mean, I think we tend to see our problems as unique, and we're the only sufferers, and it becomes this very insular view of the world when it's just happening to you. But when you realize that, you know, the number of my friends, let alone strangers, but just my immediate friend group, that, you know, a third suffer from some sort of panic or anxiety or depression, to me, I actually find that really inspiring, and you go, okay, like, that makes it seem like less of this monumental thing. It's serious, I don't want to belittle it, but also to recognize that it is common, it's something that other people deal with, and it's something that people survive through as well.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had a panic attack.
I don't recommend it.
No, no. But I mean, you hear people, and then so you assume that it's an excuse for something. You know what I mean? That they want to get out of something, or
sure,
you know,
yeah,
or they're in line and they don't want to pay their bill or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so you think these terrible things, but until I heard you talk about it, and have heard you talk about it from time to time, you understand a lot more about, well, about stuff that you wouldn't otherwise know about, right? And I think that's the thing. You got to get out of your comfort zone sometimes and listen to things that, you know, or listen to shows or whatever that are not just things that you like, because I think that's what a lot of people do. And you talked about this recently when you were thinking about your old hometown, about sort of the mindset that people have.
Yeah,
and you know, if you think about it, we both live in Vancouver, but Vancouver's guilty of that to a lot.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, even as world class as we like to think we are, and cosmopolitan, George Clooney's in town and everyone freaks out. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. There's this weird small when it's kind of charming and kind of obnoxious, but that small
it's more
town,
obnoxious and I think charming because
that's fair. You know, but yeah, totally. Of like, Will and Kate are here, and I'm like, oh. Come on.
Yeah.
I was more excited when you talked to Kathy Jones and I learned that she was in town. I was like, "That Kathy Jones to me is a royal visit, not Kate and Will."
I saw that show last week. It's a remarkable
piece
of theater.
Okay, I gotta go see it.
Yeah, it's highly recommended. And it's unfortunately only about an hour and five, an hour and ten.
Okay.
But, you know, you can't blame her because she's the only one on stage.
No, yeah. Well, and Kathy Jones to me is such a Canadian icon.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing, too, about doing this. I mean, I always think about quitting, because it has been a long time for me doing this.
Yeah, it's, 13 years?
This is the 14th year that I've been, so by June it'll be 14, and then I'll go into 15. But, because it's tiring, you know, you have to prepare, you have to...
It takes a lot of work.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I get to talk to Kathy Jones.
Yeah.
At the Sears, while she's lying on mattresses.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't, I mean, there's no other way that would have happened.
No.
You know, and I was really surprised about that conversation. I hate that, that I'm turning this into therapy for me now and
no,
introspection.
No, honestly, it's great. I mean, it's great because I was worried I was going to do it, so I'm glad that you're deflecting questions for me.
No, you should because you're the guest. But just to talk about her is how much she shared that she probably wouldn't have otherwise shared.
Yeah.
And I mean, she talked about having to pay alimony and her friendship with Mary Walsh and how they get along now and they didn't and that sort of stuff and the anxiety about having money and things like that. I mean, I always thought, because I'm 34, that when I was that age, I wouldn't have to worry about shit like that, you know,
yeah,
like,
of course,
having money. But I mean, if she is and she's on TV regularly, I mean, Jesus, what's
what hope is there for you and I?
Yeah, what are we gonna do?
Well, probably this still.
Well,
we might have to pool our budgets in another 10 years.
Well,
but I mean, it's one of the reasons why I love Kathy Jones and why I'm drawn to people like her. And there's lots of people that do it that share so much of themselves. I don't think you have to do it. It's a style, and I don't think I could do it any other way. But I love that people can share that kind of stuff and that you, like you said, you wouldn't otherwise know or hear about. And when we interact with each other day to day, there's so much artifice that goes up. I mean, even with some of our closest friends. So kind of, you know, somewhat linking it back to like the anxiety thing. I was like, it wasn't, I'm always second guessing the decisions I make on the show. I'm not like just boldly being like, whatever, I don't care, I'll just share everything.
Yeah.
I'm deeply uncomfortable with a lot of the stuff that I share. But if I don't share it, then what's the point of me doing the show and saying that it's, you know, from the heart and, you know, it's actually who I am? And what good is it to other people if we're not actually going into that? What's the fear? What's the elation? But and what's the sadness? Like, we have to be able to have those conversations. And there's so few avenues to have that, I think, in certainly in our daily lives, but in media. Everything's very polished and packaged and has a particular purpose and is very on point, and people have become very media savvy. So when people are just disarmed and open and just say what's actually in their hearts, I just find it so refreshing. I don't even need them to have an answer. I just go, oh, thank God it's not just me.
People being evasive would be a silly name for a show, don't you think?
Truly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's lots of that show on TV.
Yeah. You've shared in these last few minutes, and you do regularly on your show, the view that you have of the culture, the world, how you'd like society to be a bit better. I mean, reaching out and talking to people, I mean, that's a great first step, isn't it? I mean, to getting the world that we want but need, I suppose.
Absolutely, yeah. I think, and I mean, as we were kind of talking about before the show, about if you surround yourself with politics and only your own opinions and ideas, but or if you start from there with other people, I think you really limit the conversation that you can have and maybe miss that common ground. I'm not saying you can't have a political conversation with people, but I think we're so used to engaging with each other with that first, right? Or what's your political leaning, or what do you think needs to happen?
How much do you make, you know?
How much you make? What do you do?
That's a very Vancouver thing, isn't it?
Yeah, what do you value? And I sometimes I'm just more interested in the more existential stuff that people have going on in their lives, and then I think it's a great equalizer where you realize, yeah, maybe I do have more in common with that person. And it doesn't mean you have to like them. It doesn't mean you have to vote the same way as them. But you maybe understand why they make the decisions they do. And I think ultimately that leads to a more informed society and a more connected community. And when we talk about a city like Vancouver that is, you know, horrendously expensive and pushes people to the margins and kind of always has in a way, I think that's an important conversation to have, is to look for the commonalities rather than look for the differences and be like, oh, well, that person lives in Yale Town, so
we automatically assume what.
Yeah, I could.
Well, how they are.
Yeah, well, right. I want to talk to that person.
Yeah. What's kept you in Vancouver?
I think there's a weird level that you hit where you kind of, you're stuck. Like, it's so expensive that you can't afford to leave, you know, because it takes a certain level of income to stay. You know, I have a good job here. my partner lives here. It's where we met. I don't know how long it'll last, to be honest. I feel similarly to a lot of people. I'm not ready to throw in the towel just yet, but yeah. I feel like for like most Vancouverites, I see the writing on the wall that I just go, in order to keep doing what I'm doing sustainably, is it feasible to do it in Vancouver? And at what point do you go, okay, what a deal is in Vancouver can get you something that's very... very modest somewhere else. But I don't know where that somewhere else is yet. I also fiercely love Vancouver, so...
Yeah, for all the bullshit and the nonsense and the idiocy of it, it's still a great place to live. I mean, and it goes back to that point earlier about just how many creative people there are. I mean, if they're here, well, why not stay here, right?
And it isn't easy. Yeah. You know, and it isn't easy for these artists, and that to me again is what makes it particularly compelling to talk to them. Of if you're wanting to be an independent artist here in this city, people are just like, "Are you insane?" But people do it. You know, my partner does it. My partner is an independent artist and works in costuming and theater, and she is gainfully employed and has been for two or three years. Again, we don't know if that's going to last forever, but that. Vancouver is a great city, and it's filled with great people. That is, in a nutshell, what keeps me here. I mean, there's my whole community and friendship network and, you know, people like yourself that you can just sort of randomly meet. I think Vancouver is also kind of, like, it's got a long history of that. The independent artists, people who are just doing things that help each other out and make connections that way. The thought of having to start that over somewhere else is also very daunting.
Yeah.
Even if it's more affordable.
Yeah. And I mean, but it's something that we are all talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't turn on other podcasts or read things online without... But I mean, I tend to wonder if they're having those same conversations about their city and their place in it as in other cities, say.
I think Vancouver's got a weird chip on its shoulder, too, because it's always...
It's that small-mindedness, isn't it?
I think it is.
We're constantly trying to explain ourselves to ourselves.
Yeah, and I mean, I went to Toronto for the first time 2 years ago, and I was amazed that nobody gave a shit about Vancouver and Toronto. Not they didn't like Vancouver. Yeah, they were just like, oh, yeah, I hear Vancouver's really nice. And I was sort of ready to be defensive for Vancouver. And people were like, oh, cool, you're from there? Yeah, I've always wanted to go. And realized Vancouver's the one with the rivalry. Toronto doesn't care because they're just getting on with their lives.
It's so big that they, you know, they give a shit, right?
Exactly, and it's such a big city that's really just a conglomeration of individual neighborhoods. There isn't even really a Toronto identity. So, and I think that's a Canadian thing. You get these fractured communities in a city, and we call that a city, and we say that there's an identity. I don't know that that's always true. And so I think Vancouver always struggles with that a little. And I think it's okay to shit talk the town you live in. I love it. Yeah. I live here for a reason.
Yeah.
But it does sometimes have that thing of like, well, oh, but we're, you know, we're really world class, you know. We're just like New York. Like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
And you don't need to be.
Yeah.
You can just be Vancouver.
The other great thing that you do, and we've touched on this already, but I think it's worth exploring, is look at the arts as you do.
Yeah.
Critically, and even just covering the arts as you do.
Sure.
I mean, you go to the Jessies, and then you'll talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
There is a great community, as we've established already, in this town, but there aren't enough people talking about.
No.
And I can't think of another podcast that does. Other than yourself.
Well, I hope not.
Yeah.
I kind of just stumbled into that, to be honest. I mean, again, I started with the idea of just the people I knew who were doing some interesting things, and not all of them were artists. Some, like, I had a counselor on, and, you know, people in various industries, PR people, things like that. But really, once I have an in to the independent theater scene through my partner, Laura, but once I saw, like, nobody's going to this stuff. I mean, people are a small group, enough people that they're putting on these shows.
The same people go to the same openings. You know, I mean, I go to opening, like the Kathy Jones opening night.
Yeah.
I would say, well, you get the critics in, so I mean, that's their own.
Yeah, you
cohort.
Know you're going to see Colin Thomas and a few other
Jerry
people.
Jerry Wasserman and things like that. But then you look at the other people, well, those are probably the donors.
Yeah.
So it's the same faces that you see.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think in, I mean, I had Mark Lyron Young on once, and there's such good theater that it hasn't hit the you know. But I mean, you look at the Fringe Festival, you look at Push.
Yeah.
Those things are sold out. Those are well attended.
Yeah.
So.
Which is weird that people don't talk about it. Because
yeah.
I sort of thought the same of like, oh, maybe no one's going. People are. Yeah. You're right that a lot of the audience, especially on openings, is primarily donors and people in the industry and fellow actors, and that's all right. But it was bizarre to me to sort of discover there's not always a lot of media coverage. And in terms of the long form, which is kind of my niche,
yeah,
really there's not much of it. And I'll sit down and talk to anybody for an hour. And so if somebody's got a show or, you know, they've written something, that to me is really exciting. And hopefully it's exciting for them as well to get to talk about their art.
Yeah.
And I feel like they should have more opportunities. I mean, in a way, I'd love there to be more competition for what I do. As it stands right now, there isn't.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I haven't left yet.
Sure.
Is because there's no, I mean, who's going to interview, do a, you know, a good 20, 30 minutes with the people at PAL who have this new, play.
Yeah.
That the two, retired people wrote.
Yeah.
And that they are staging there with other PAL residents and other retired people in the theatrical community. I mean, they could probably get on Quinn's show.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, what, 4 or 5 minutes?
Yeah.
And to have the time. Well, and I guess we've lucked out that the internet has allowed us a place to do this for
Absolutely.
As long. You know what I mean?
And then here, I got all excited that you were interviewing them, because my Tanya, who was on my show, is the stage manager for that show. So I was like, oh, this is great. And like, admittedly, when you first reached out, I was like, oh, shit, who else is doing this in this town? And
yeah.
Then I was like, oh, and he's been doing it for so much longer. There's not even a hope of competition here. But, you know, but, and
well,
I love...
We'll have to feud then.
We can start a totally arbitrary rivalry.
Yeah. No, but I mean, the fact that, I mean, these are people.
Yeah.
Not only that, you think of, there's a couple great things that happened at Push last year.
Yeah.
That are coming back this year.
Mm-hmm.
That people, I mean, that were sold out, but more people should see.
Yeah.
And if I can devote whatever time I can on this program to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm only happy to do that because...
Of course.
You know.
And even if... and again, like, everybody's going to have their own angle towards it. And even if I can't talk to the person, you know, like when I went to see the show Betroffenheit, that was a sort of a moment for me of going like, this show fundamentally changed the way I think. And that's important. And so I don't even care if I get to talk to Jonathan Young. I just need to share that this stuff exists and that, you know, people talk about being bored or that Vancouver doesn't have a good art scene or whatever. Like, it's got its struggles, but I'm like, there is life-changing art happening every single week in your city. No, it's not easy to find. So I'm like, at the very least, I want to let people know that these types of things are going on. I don't want to just be like an arts and culture show where I'm just doing a rundown of everything that's in the Georgia Strait, but, you know, if there's good shows coming up with good people attached, or good art projects, whatever it is, people should know about it.
Yeah, I was talking to someone at the Taiyi,
and
she was saying that, yeah, no, there needs to be a podcast, you know, an arts and culture, even just a news thing.
Yeah.
And I think, and she's absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as rich a town as it is in talent and events and the sort, there needs to be someone who covers it.
Yeah.
And reviews it. And I mean, there are reviewers, but I mean, there needs to be something online that, you
I'll
know, does...
I'll throw it out there. If Colin Thomas had a podcast, I would listen to it. It's not a challenge, Colin, but if you do it...
Have you ever had him on?
I haven't yet, no. I want to have him on, but I... Yeah. I'm somewhat intimidated by, like, the local celebrity types, because I just don't know if they're gonna be like, what? Like, who are you? Why are you doing this?
Again, that goes to the small town mind.
It totally does. Yeah,
because I'll tell you that I've interviewed all the news anchors in the city.
Yeah.
And it was not as hard booking, well, it wasn't as hard booking Jake Tapper from CNN or Conrad Black or Joe Clark as it was to book those people. It's insane, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's
I've had it too with people that nobody knows about, where I'm like pulling teeth trying to get them on the show, and I'm like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm not trying to exalt myself too much, but I'm like, nobody knows who you are. Like, just come and talk to me. It's not that big of a deal, you know? Like, this isn't, we're not setting up Frost Nixon here. Like, just.
Yeah. It frustrates me. There are people that I want to have on the show from here.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I appreciate when they say no.
Sure.
That doesn't happen very often, thankfully.
Yeah.
But there are people that I've got files that are ongoing.
Yeah.
Correspondence, 2, 3, 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, and it's insanity.
It is. When I tend to take things very personally, so I give up very easily.
I do too. Yeah. Yeah, no, I do too.
And I should also say I haven't even reached out to Colin Thomas, so a part of it is my small town thing of like, he's got too many important things to do. He doesn't want to talk to me in my closet in my home.
Well, no, I think you should, and I think it'll be fun.
Yeah.
I've actually thought of having him on too, but I've never pursued it like you, but I think
all right,
him on your show would be a great conversation.
I think it would be good. He seems like an incredibly interesting person, and I mean, I know he's got strong opinions about theater, which can sometimes ruffle feathers amongst the theater community, but I love it. And again, who else is doing it, right? Like, if we didn't have those people covering the arts, people wouldn't know what to go see or what is important. If Colin Thomas says something changed his life, people want to go see that show.
Yeah, and it's a great...
Not nothing.
Yeah, and it's just a great way to meet people, and it's a great way to say, let's pause as you do the work that you do and reflect on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, that's happened on this thing. I've talked to people, and, you know, in the course of 13, 14 years, you know, some of them have died.
Yeah.
And some of those conversations are terribly interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, they were terribly interesting when we did them, but I mean, to look back at them and see how much... Like, I mean, I remember I had Dale Richards on a couple times.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know, he lived to be 95, 96 or something like that. And so I talked to him when he was in his late 80s, 90s.
Yeah.
But I mean, there was just so much that I got out of him in the time that, you know, that I mean, looking back now that he's gone, now that he's died,
mm-hmm.
it's fascinating to think that I had that chance.
Yeah. And that's what I love about this format, is it continues to exist. And often, I rarely get a chance to listen to the shows again. I just do the show, post it, and it's out there. But, you know, when I do get the chance to go back, you know, I've got a friend who's terminally ill who's on the show, and I think about, I've got that conversation forever.
Yeah.
That's just so special to me. And as with all of the guests, right? Like, it you just get to keep building this archive. And yeah, you always want to have new conversations, but I feel like conversations also don't expire.
Yeah.
Like, even if it's about a particular show and the show was 10 years ago, there's something in there that is like a little time capsule and a way into that person's mind or their life at a particular moment that I think it's important to document and to record it.
And people of our vintage don't do that enough.
No.
And we have Facebook and we have Twitter, but I mean, how many... Well, I guess on Facebook they have that thing that tells you what happened that day.
Yeah.
But I mean...
A year ago, you were just as slovenly as you are now.
So that's something that folks of our generation need to do better, I think, in terms of remembering stuff.
I think there's the desire for it and the hunger for it, which I think explains why we can do the work that we do. There is an audience for it. I just think there's not enough venues for people to access it. And so when you give them the opportunity to explore history, not just what's going on and current events, but history in their own city or their own country or whatever. People do want it. I think people are hungry for it.
What were you always introspective?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it wasn't like when you hit 30, you started thinking about these things?
No.
Yeah.
No, I was a very introspective kid. I had many existential crises from a very young age.
Yeah, so I mean...
If anything, I think it's gotten better.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, I'm 34, but people of my generation are now looking back a lot more.
Yeah.
But I mean, I was always looking back and
looking
back further even, you know, things like that.
Yeah, and I mean, I tend to be very inward-looking as well. And so that's another reason why the show for me is great, is because it gets me out of my own head. Yeah, I do one where I'm just talking to myself, but when I'm talking to a guest, it gets me outside of my own head, and I remember, like, oh, right. the rest of the world. It's not just whatever inner turmoil and, oh, how come there's too much going on and I can't make decisions? And then I sit with somebody for an hour and you just try to lock in and be present with them and talk through whatever thing it is they want to talk about that gets you outside of that. And then you go, oh, yeah, I'm just a human being, like just flailing my arms like every other human being. It's okay.
What's your preparation like when you have a guest?
It's usually a little haphazard. I'm better now at not getting caught in the shower. I tend to schedule people a little too close to the time I get home from work.
Oh, so you do this in the evening, do you?
Yeah, evenings and weekends is pretty much how I get it done. But I mean, really, I just want to get some sense of what it is the person does, but I don't do any research.
It's fascinating that I just asked you when you do it, because to me, I mean, I sort of get a sense when you do it, listening to it. But I mean, at the same time, it you know, you don't. I mean, the conversation is the conversation, and it doesn't matter when it. You know, I mean, I'll be listening to it probably at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
But it's funny how we have these habits, and yet at the end of the day, when you have the tape or whatever it is, I mean, it's digital.
Mm-hmm. But when you listen to it, becomes a part of it.
It becomes like, that. That's routine. When it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I'm listening to you having your panic attack.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it's at night.
Yeah.
And then if you have a guest, it's probably in the morning or in the daytime.
Mm, yeah. No, it's usually in the evening.
Yeah.
And usually, and that almost helps me, is because usually I've just come home from work and I'm kind of a little frazzled. I'm usually starting to panic because I don't know what I'm going to talk about. And then the buzzer rings and I'm like, oh shit, they're here. Okay, like... And then they come in, and I'm like, do you want, like, water or something? Like, you know, I've gotten better at it over the years. But once we're in it, it just goes.
So are you like me that you have pages of notes and things like that in front of you? Or
no, I don't write anything down.
Really?
Really.
Huh.
I probably should.
God, I envy that.
The only time I do it is with, like, a Skype conversation, just because without being face-to-face, I lose track of what's going on. I have a fairly distracted memory, and fragmented, which is useful in very few situations, but a conversation is one of them, where we can go on tangents, but I can remember what things people have said and kind of come back to it if it's relevant most of the time.
Yeah.
Don't hold me to that, but...
Yeah, I'll have a sheet of notes like I do here.
Yeah, with us. No, and that looks incredibly useful.
But it's not in any order. I mean, it's not like a... I mean, maybe the first question... would be the first question that I'd ask you, but I mean, you know, I'll try to knock off as many of these things throughout the conversation.
Sure, yeah.
But it's not in that order, and I think if you hold yourself to an order, I mean, I'll say, "How are you, Nick?" And then you say, "Well, I murdered my wife this morning." Oh, really? What else?
So tell us about your new book.
Yeah, you know, it'll end up like that.
Yeah,
which you know, does happen, on the CBC. You know?
Yeah, of course. Well, I think everybody needs to have their own style and approach to it to find their way into a conversation. Again, I tend to be kind of a frenetic, all over the place person, so that's how I prefer to approach a conversation.
Yeah.
I also find that less anxiety inducing. If I have a page of questions in front of me, I'll panic.
Yeah.
If you tell me I have to go in front of a room of 200 people and talk about anything, I'm like, great, done. If you tell me I have to give a PowerPoint presentation or like read a speech, I will like basically be physically and mentally on the verge of not being able to do it. So the in the moment thing is what makes me the most comfortable. So I'm in a way, like, it seemed, people are like, oh, it's so spontaneous. I'm like, that's me in my comfort zone, though. So
that's another thing that I envy about how you conduct your show. And I mean, I you know, I wish I had that.
But likewise, I wish I could think of questions beforehand. It's out of sheer laziness that I don't really, because a lot of times I just don't have time to go and, you know, let's say it's a musician. I can't listen to, if they've got 4 or 5 albums, I can't listen to all of that.
Yeah.
And then think of specific questions about, okay, well, why did you do this? Or why did you make this decision? I try to just harness, it's easier with strangers in some way to just be like, who are you?
Yeah.
Tell me, like, where do you come from? Like, tell me about where you grew up. What did your folks do? What turned you on to art or sewing or, you know, politics, whatever it is? That, again, once you get rolling, the first part's always awkward for me because I don't have a starting point. But once you're in it, and you're just talking to a person. I just try to treat it like a conversation. And so it's almost like having a first date every week, which can be kind of awkward, but...
Especially if you just walked out of the shower and they see you there, and they're thinking, yeah. What is this?
It's usually only been with people I've known, or I've had to be like, can you come on in, make yourself comfortable, I just need to get changed, I am sorry.
Do you have a preference? Because you do most of your interviews in person,
yeah,
and then you have done some on Skype.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a preference of the two?
Yeah, I much prefer to talk to people in person.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it helps. The whole premise behind the podcast was always being like you're eavesdropping on a really interesting conversation in a coffee shop.
Yeah.
There's so much that just comes out through body language and looking somebody in the eyes and fidgeting with things on a desk or looking around that I just think it's really hard to replicate. And Skype and the phone is always just hard because it's hard not to interrupt people and interject at awkward moments and read what it is they're going to say at what time.
Yeah.
I'll do it, and I've had good ones. If I can sit face-to-face with a person, that's my preference. I could probably talk to a lot more people if I did the phone thing or Skype thing more. But ultimately, I think that people like yourself do that really well. I think I would, if I did it all the time, it would sound terrible.
Do you limit yourself in terms of how much time you have with a guest?
No. And I mean, unless I am limited, like I've got a doctor's appointment, but the podcast is the main thing I schedule in my life outside of work.
Yeah.
So if somebody needs to talk for 5 hours, we'll talk for 5 hours. If somebody only has a half hour worth of material, we'll do that.
And
generally the show is an hour and a half, sometimes longer. I've never published a show over 2 hours. I'll either split it into two parts or do a bunch of editing, but I hate editing. So I try to keep it to hour and a half.
Yeah, I'm not nimble with a mouse or technical, so editing for me is not really an option.
Sure, so but I'm lazy, so it's not an option for me either.
I guess I am lazy, too. So that's why I sort of have in my mind a 20, if it's in person, maybe 40, 45.
Yeah.
That's the boundary.
Yeah.
And it generally works that way because you're working to a clock, and... I mean, it can be anxiety-inducing, and maybe that's where I have my own panic attack every show. But because you are looking at the clock, or you're making sure the thing's still running.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So those things you have to worry about, those technical things. And I wish I didn't have to worry about those things, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, it's you're always working with some kind of constraint. I mean, people are busy. I recognize that when guests come to me especially, you know, they've made the trip to my house, and... they've taken time out of their evening usually to talk. So I try to be mindful of that. I try to get going rather quickly so we're not sitting there waffling. But if somebody wants to waffle and chat for an hour before, that's fine with me.
Yeah.
I try to not get too many ideas in my head about what a conversation is going to be or what it's going to look like before it happens and just kind of roll with it. That being said, there's times where I'm like, oh, we could have just recorded the last hour of that, and that could have been a great conversation, and now we're starting. But, you know, that's fine, too. That happens.
Where do you see, you will continue the show, right? I mean, this is not something that's going to end anytime soon for you.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, and do you think greater frequency is something that you're perhaps considering?
I would love to. Two shows a week takes a lot of time, as it is, especially, as you know, booking people.
Yeah.
I think it would be hard to book more guests in a week. The fact that you talk to so many people you do in a week, I was just like, I don't
know. You know, and the funny thing is...
It's astounding.
No, it's staggering, and it's a pain in the ass, and it's annoying, you know, because it takes you away from other things that you'd rather do. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I'd rather watch a stack of movies that I have here, right?
Sure.
But once you're in the... groove, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You want to do more. Like,
yeah.
I wish I could do twice what I do.
Oh, totally.
Because I would probably, one, enjoy it, and I'd probably be better at it.
Yeah, that's a good, it's an interesting point. I mean, I would love to. I think that I would always love to do my show. I think that it's found its kind of voice and its niche and its audience that I feel very close to it. I definitely would love to... do more broadcasting. I've considered starting another podcast. Again, it just kind of comes down to time.
Like,
it most weeks I don't have a lot going on in my life, so it seems like a good idea. But when things get busy,
yeah,
you're just like, oh my god, how am I? Like,
yeah, but
it would just take so much more work to run two podcasts or to do more. But I would. It's something that I've always wanted to do, and so now that I'm doing it, I have no intention of giving it up. Not yeah. without a fight.
Yeah, even I was telling Hal Wake, who's on the show next week, because he was the morning host at CBC for many years, and then mm-hmm. now he runs the Writers' Fest. Because we've talked about leaving broadcasting, and I mean, he has the marvelous ability of doing what he does now,
mm-hmm.
but whether he would miss it. I mean, I was telling him that I was thinking of ending this,
mm-hmm.
But I mean, you just think every fall there's another stack of books that, you know, yeah. authors, and you just, I mean, to give that up would be, you know, ridiculous to do, you know, to even think of that. But I mean, you know, you do get tired. I mean, you
absolutely. And I love it. I love doing it. It's such a huge part of my life and my week.
Mm-hmm.
There's obviously times I'm just like, oh God, I haven't done a show. It's Tuesday. I should have done a show on Monday. Do I do one on Wednesday? Do I even have anything to say? Maybe I don't. No one's going to listen anyway. Like, I don't have anything to give to people. But like you say, then you see a show or you watch a movie or read a book or you talk to somebody and all of a sudden
yeah.
you've got material again, and I just feel compelled. Like, it's that, like, physical pull to, like, all right, I got to get home, like, got to close the door, turn the mics on, and talk.
Yeah. Well, my advice, not that you asked, is not marry yourself to the idea that you have to do it on, say, Monday or Thursday.
Oh, yeah. No, I gave that up a while ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, I do, like, we're taping this on Saturday afternoon. This mm-hmm. probably won't get up on the site until, say, Wednesday.
Yeah.
But, you know, it may go on earlier, it may go on later, but still, you know, it'll go up eventually, but mm-hmm. it, you know, it may go up on a Sunday even.
Yeah.
It just depending on whatever, you know, whatever else there is, and whether I get my ass and you know, get it all up on the website.
Yeah,
and
that's
all
usually
that.
My schedule as well.
Yeah. This has been fun for me.
This has been so good, man.
Great. Because, as I said, I enjoy your show, and you don't get the chance, because there's not very many of us that do this.
No.
You don't get a chance to really reflect on this stuff that we do.
I feel like we need to start an underground guild or something.
Well, we should.
We meet once a month in the shadows.
Yeah, and plot.
Yeah.
And establish ourselves as a sort of establishment in the city, you know, and show up the
yeah.
you know. But no, I again appreciate you coming in to do this, and all the best.
Thank you. I was very, very humbled and honored that you asked me to be on.
You're too kind. PDTpod.com is the website. Nick Thornton, its host, join me in person here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Platinum.